It's him. Here he is, Arthur
Who?
Schwartz, the Flemish, on Robin Hood Radio. Hello, Arthur Schwartz, the
Hello,
Flemish.
hello, hello. I got to thinking this week about things that are not true. People are told all the time. Now, it end, I wrote a list, and it ends up a lot of them are about pasta. So let me at first get one thing out of the way. Fresh pasta is not necessarily better than dried pasta. You can have good fresh pasta and bad fresh pasta, and you can have good dried pasta or, ordinary dried pasta. But anyway, moving on. What got me thinking about this to start was grating garlic. This is a new thing, I think. I mean, I never saw instructions for grating garlic when I was younger. I do know that in Puglia, which is the stiletto heel of the boot, Italy, that side of the peninsula, they do grate garlic. And in fact, I have, I don't use it, but it's very decorative, a tiny Pugliese garlic grater, ceramic. And you rub your garlic on this and it works. But I what I see everybody doing is using the microplane. So for certain instances, I have also used a microplane, but I've been missing a garlic press. Now, I have to say that this is a myth that using a garlic press makes the garlic taste metallic. There's all kinds of reasons people have been not using a garlic press. I think this all started, the not using a garlic press, with Craig Claiborne, who was the food editor of the New York Times for many, many years, wrote the original New York Times cookbook, meaning compiled all these recipes from the time. Anyway, he was anti-garlic press. I knew Craig, and he would tell you that it changed the quality of the flavor, and it does. I tried this the other day. I decided I was sick of microplaning garlic, which is really a pain, and I think I might adopt a garlic press again. So I bought myself an OXO garlic press. I've liked my other OXO kitchen gadgets, and the original idea behind OXO was to have these big, soft rubber handles for people with arthritis. At the time that they invented this, 30 years ago, I didn't really have arthritis on my mind, but now I understand better what they mean. In fact, I have to say, a doctor told me this, that the first joints to go when you have arthritis are your basal thumb joints. And I was once sitting around a table with some friends my age. This is already 10 years ago, maybe. And we were all complaining about our basal, and we all thought we had basal, what do you call it? Whatever. In any case, it
Okay.
ends up it was arthritis. Anyway, back to the garlic press. So I used the garlic press the other day in a place where I normally would have grated garlic, the microplane. And for sure, the flavor was different. Now, this could be the moment I do my whole little lecture on garlic, but I think I won't because I have a lot of other myths and lies to get to. But the thing about garlic is that depending on how you treat it, its flavor will change. So a lot of Italians who don't really love garlic the way Americans think they do might put it sort of a semi-crushed clove of, not crushed in the garlic press, but with the heel of your hand crushed. Garlic clove and some oil to flavor the oil before you add other ingredients. Or you might slice garlic, or you might halve the garlic. I mean, there are a lot of ways to treat the garlic, including minced and including smashed. So it depends on how you cook garlic, how you cut the garlic, and how it's going to taste. And I must say that through the garlic press, it had an old-fashioned, really sharp a garlic edge to it. So there you go. It's a myth that you can't use a garlic press, that it does something bad to the garlic. And or if you really want to see a master smash garlic, see if you can find Jacques Pepin online, crushing some garlic. He does it with the blade of a knife, and I've tried it so many times. It never comes out as good as his, of course. Also, okay, so now that we're in the pasta zone, garlic, let me say that a big myth is that you add oil to the pasta cooking water so that the pasta doesn't stick together. I don't want to go into it, but just don't do it. What's going to happen is the oil will make a slick on the pot, on the spaghetti, and it won't the sauce won't cling as well. Then there's the one about never, I hear this even in the States here, in a bag, spaghetti spezzati, which means broken spaghetti. And it comes in a bag, already broken. And what you do with it is you make use it for soup, or you use it to make the pasta and dishes. I have a sadly deceased friend who used to, cardiologist, by the way. He smoked all day, every day, and drank all day, every day, but he ate very healthy. Anyway, he called them the pasta and dishes, like pasta and lentils, pasta and beans, pasta and squash. Pasta and any vegetable, any of those. There is a zucchini version of that. And you use a broken spaghetti. Now, I don't buy broken spaghetti for one thing. I don't see it very often in the market. If I did, I would buy it just for fun. But I often have, just a couple of ounces of spaghetti left over in a box or in a bag. And I often break that up. The way to do it, by the way, is in a dish towel, clean dish towel, so that the as you're breaking up the spaghetti, it doesn't fly all over the place. So anyway, now here's one that I hear more and more, and I more and more irritates me. Save pasta cooking water to use later when you're tossing the pasta with whatever you're dressing the pasta with. Now, there are times when I do want pasta cooking water, which is not only salty but starchy, and but it will change the both texture and flavor of whatever I'm adding it to. So you have to be very careful. And I have to say that I've never ever made a tomato sauce or any kind of tomato-based sauce that required any pasta cooking water. Yes, sometimes you want like carbonara. Some people want to add a little bit of the hot water at the end to loosen it up a little bit. I don't, there are cases where I would add it, but very few actually. Not the way I see it all over the place. It's like, oh, always save the pasta cooking water. You're going to need it later. Maybe I won't need it later. Here's one that really gets me. Gluten is not a bad thing. Gluten is actually a good thing. Gluten is a protein in grain. And when you work it up with water in the in flour, it becomes the structure of the bread or other product that you're making. For instance, would be a yeast risen cake, for instance. Anyway, gluten is a protein. Now, there are people who are intolerant to gluten. They have celiac disease or Crohn's disease or some other gastrointestinal problem that prevents them from digesting gluten the way the rest of us can. I can. Never had a problem with gluten. And I've never been on a gluten-free diet, although I do know people who are on gluten-free who say they didn't have any indications of being gluten intolerant, but they say they feel better. I don't know. I don't want to feel better. I want to eat pasta. And in fact, pasta is a high gluten product, which is a good thing because it indicates the amount of protein that is in the wheat. And we want our pasta to be made from high protein wheats. And that would be high in gluten as well. And in fact, my indication, not 100% of the time, but my indication of a good pasta is if you look at the nutritional labeling and it says there is 7 grams of protein per serving for two, for it's actually a 2 ounce serving, then you're good to go. If it's under 7, I'm a little suspicious. On the other hand, I recently have been buying Garofalo, which is a pasta from Gragnano, which is the pasta town outside Naples. And it's a very, very good pasta, Garofalo. And the regular Garofalo pasta is a 7 gram per serving pasta, but the organic Garofalo is only 6. Gotta say, I can't tell the difference taste-wise, and the 6 gram pasta is widely available at a good price, so I buy it. Anyway, so there you go. There's a case where dry pasta might actually have the edge over a fresh pasta, because fresh pasta is not necessarily made with high protein grain, with high protein wheat. The pastas made in the south of Italy, the fresh pastas, are often made without eggs, and they can have a high portion of protein because they are made with semolina flour and water. For the most part, very grainy, whole grain bread. And let's start with that. A lot of bread that is labeled whole wheat, it may have some whole wheat flour in it. I just this morning tried to find out what, it must be a legal percentage, I would say, of whole wheat flour before they can call it whole wheat bread. But I will tell you that most of it I call beige bread. I mean, it's barely whole wheat. Maybe a slice will have 1 gram of fiber, as opposed to in white bread, no grams of fiber. So I'm looking for fiber in the morning, as well as the micronutrients that you get from whole grains. And so I'm looking for a bread that has actual whole grain in it, as well as on it. Now, look at a lot of these whole grain breads I see. What they have is some seeds and flakes of oatmeal on the outside of what I call beige bread. This does not, for me, make it a whole grain bread. So some of these breads are better, maybe not refrigerated, but frozen. Like my bread will grow stuff because it's full of nutrients. And white bread doesn't grow anything, it just gets stale. I think maybe if you store it really badly, it would get moldy, but I'm not one to throw away bread. When I do have like a loaf of Italian bread that is not whole grain, but I bought for whatever reason, I will let it dry and make breadcrumbs. I mean, I don't mind white bread breadcrumbs, even though I do also buy whole wheat bread that I make into breadcrumbs. Anyway, so some breads store better outside the refrigerator, and some breads, but not many, in the refrigerator. But I must say, almost all breads be frozen. So when I buy a big loaf of a whole grain bread that I love, and I'm not going to get back to that store tomorrow, I'll freeze part of it. And also, let me say, if you can buy bread that is not sliced, it lasts longer than bread that is sliced. Now, I guess this brings me to cheese storage. I think I go against the rules, but I think I'm right. For instance, my wedges of Parmigiano go in a plastic bag. Now, it's true, I use up cheese rather quickly, so it never gets a chance to get moldy. But if you store it in a plastic bag in the refrigerator, it will get moldy. I guarantee you. May take a week or two, but it will get moldy. I remember the days when I used to have a piece of cheesecloth that I would wrap around the cheese and then wrap that in paper. That is the really correct way to do it. A pain. You have to unwrap the cheese every time you want to use it. Do not pre-grate the cheese, though. I must say, however you're going to store it as a whole piece is going to be better than if you pre-grate it for more than a day. I often will pre-grate a lot of cheese and have left over, put it in a little plastic container, and keep it for a day. You've got to be remember the next day to make something where I can use that little bit of cheese, but usually I can. So, yeah, storing cheese is a problem. We also eat a lot of cheddar around here, and the same goes for cheddar. I keep it in a plastic bag, but if I kept it the old-fashioned way, it probably would stay better longer, but I'm too lazy. Frozen vegetables. So I am now, when I don't always want to go out to get fresh vegetables, I've been keeping some frozen vegetables on hand. Now, let me say for a start, peas are not a compromise. Frozen peas are invariably better than any fresh pea you can buy. Or maybe you can grow better peas and pick them exactly the right moment and cook them the same day. I mean, that's what you have to do. But frozen peas are my favorite frozen vegetable. And one of the things I like to do with them is make, and I just did this the other day, pasta e piselli. And I do it several different ways. Pasta and peas. I had these little elbow, little tiny, and I don't even know where I bought them, tiny pasta elbows, a little bigger than a pea. So I wanted to cook that, and I had and I have well stocked with frozen peas. I must say, not every frozen pea is alike. I buy a fancy brand called Cascade or Cascade Farms, and they're superior, I have to say. I'm willing to pay them for them. But the way I did it the other day was I did it with pancetta, which I don't always do, but I had it and I wanted to use it. Even pancetta can go bad. So, and mine had not, but I wanted to use it before it did. And I used about 4 ounces of pancetta, a cube, cooked it out with a couple tablespoons of olive oil until the cubes got crispy. Then I pulled them off and I added a small minced, finely minced red onion. And I sauteed that for a few minutes. Red onion gets soft very quickly. Didn't take more than like 5 minutes. And then I added a 10-ounce bag of my peas and 2 cups of water. And I brought it to a boil. And then I added I think I had 5 ounces of these elbows. Really, 4 would have been enough. And I added that to the pot. And then I added just enough water to make sure the macaroni was well covered, which was only maybe another half a cup or so. I think I then drizzled in a little later a tiny bit more water. But this all depends on if you want it soupy or dry. I wanted it sort of neither. I wanted some juiciness, but I didn't want it soup. But we did eat it with a spoon. So then you just cook your pasta until it's tender enough for you. You may have to check your salt and pepper. And then I put in before I ladled it into bowls, I put in a good handful of what else?
Just before frozen peas and way back when frozen corn, I don't know still, but loose were very useful. And I think we even talked about this many years ago. But it was flash frozen peas and the you say frozen corn kernels, perfectly
Yes. And
more
another
cookable
one
and
is
tasty.
artichoke hearts.
Right.
Another one, yeah, I buy frozen artichoke hearts. They're, first of all, of course, they're way easier to cook than ones you have to clean up yourself. But they're
Talk
very
about
good. They're
time.
very, very good. What?
I said, talk about time consuming.
Exactly. It's not one of my favorite jobs. So I'm
Sure.
happy to buy frozen artichokes. And also frozen spinach, although I must say not on the level of fresh spinach, is still something handy to have in the refrigerator. I can do stuff with, you add enough garlic and hot pepper and olive oil, and you will know the difference.
I,
Anyway.
you're right. I mean, taste wise, no comparison. But if you are making a quiche or doing
Yeah.
something that includes the spinach, then that works well. And
I have
the
not made Quiche. You're speaking of quiche. I have not made quiche in years. However, my next door neighbor, who occasionally shops for me, heard me talking about buying pastry, and she bought me two refrigerated pastry shells, now pie shells. Now, I have to ask where she got them because they were really, really good. And I made quiche with them. And I made classic quiche Lorraine and one I did with broccoli that I. So, yeah. I cooked the broccoli first, by the way. So,
Doesn't
anyway,
everybody?
there are a lot of food myths and lies out there. Here's one I love. Never ever rinse pasta. Well, I don't want to do ever, but there are occasions where you want to rinse the macaroni. If you're making American style macaroni salad, I suggest you rinse the pasta in cold water as soon as it's done to your taste to stop the cooking. But here's a trick I learned not only from a Neapolitan book, but my friend Bert Green, the late great Bert Green, who owned that store in the Hamptons called The Store. And he served a very, very famous, he called it ziti salad because it was with ziti. And just like my Neapolitan friend, who was making a timbalo and wanted the pasta that he was going to put inside this drum to stop cooking so that it wouldn't get too cooked, he soaked it in milk, drain the pasta, and toss it with cold milk. Bert does the same thing with his ziti salad. I never got to ask Bert where he discovered that, but if you're making macaroni salad, it's a good thing to do. Pull it off the stove and drain it when it's to your taste, I'll say, and then toss it with cold milk several times until the milk will absorb into the pasta as the pasta cools, and then when you put a mayonnaise or other kind of creamy dressing on your macaroni salad, it won't the macaroni won't absorb the dressing because it will have already absorbed the cold milk. So, be especially those of you who go on TikTok, I find there are a lot of myths and lies being perpetuated on TikTok food, food, what do they call creators, content created, whatever. So here's your favorite content creator, Arthur Schwartz, signing off on Robinhood Radio.
Can't do it better. Thank you very much, Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch, on Robinhood Radio.